put your label on me. Categorize, classifies, put me in my place. So you can run on home, eat your meal, and say your grace. You relegate me to the shelf, or send me off to someone else for professional help. But you've done your Christian duty, told me Jesus loves me, and he even died to set me free. But the bricks and mortar hold strong, insulated sanctuary where you belong. While I peer in at stained glass windows, standing tippy-toed, watching while you lift your sterile, manicured, sanctified holy hands. To the God on whose side you say you stand, little disruption here. Yeah, so wait till like 20 minutes from now. Words and eyes, contradictory lies, no embrace. Two handshake, rush on home, scrub for security's sake. But the bricks and mortar hold strong, insulated sanctuary where you belong. While I peer in at stained glass windows, standing tippy-toed, watching while you lift your sterile, manicured, sanctified holy hand. To the God on whose side you say you stand. Words were spoken, promises broken, love is just a token when your actions have taken the morning train to Hoboken. But the bricks and mortar hold strong, insulated sanctuary where you belong. While I peer in at stained glass windows, standing to be told, watching while you lift your sterile, manicured, sanctified, holy hand. To the God on whose side you say you stand. But the bricks and mortar hold strong, a song I wrote 30 years ago. I wrote it about a group of people who were kept outside of the church because of two things: the church's fear of AIDS and prejudice about sexual orientation. 30 years is a long time, and I'd hoped that this song would be obsolete by now. Unfortunately, it is not. But before we enter into the dark space of lament, if you haven't already entered it into it with a song, let's thank God that we're alive. Lord, thank you for the breath we breathe today. Thank you for the lives of those gathered here. Thank you for our friends and our family that support us on the journey. Amen. So today, we're here to wrap up the sexuality series with lament, with mourning, to express our anger, and to seek to find hope. And I want to admit up front that today's chapel is probably mostly a reflection on my own journey. I became involved with sexual abuse in 1992.
I began to collect stories of women, primarily women, although a few young men as well, who had been sexually abused. I began to listen to them. I began to allow them to break my heart. I began to allow myself to grow in admiration for these survivors of this dark pain. I began to get angry. That's not the first time in my life, and it definitely hasn't been the last. But in 1992, I began to collect these stories for a video, Beyond the News Sexual Abuse. And that also upset a lot of people when it sold. I collected stories. All of them were told anonymously for the simple reason that we were planning to distribute this video nationally, and it ended up being distributed internationally as well. And I say there was one day in the production of that, and I don't know if any of you have done production where you sit with stories over and over in your head, but that's the reality of doing a video production. And one day we were recording a story, and we finished this story, and it was a brutal story of a child of five, from five to about eight, being sexually assaulted by a number of people. And after we recorded this, I just remember the woman, now a middle-aged adult, screamed. And I thought it lasted for hours. She just screamed, and it was like it came from deep inside her, and it was this deep, low, powerful scream that I will never forget. It was that scream and those stories that changed my life. Because here's what I learned, and you don't have to learn the same thing, but it's what I learned. I learned, number one, that I had to recognize that I had the capability to do this kind of abuse. That's something none of us wants to admit, but I had to. I came to understand that in many relationships, I had a power differential. And that enabled me to be an abuser if I so chose to do that. And so I came to the realization that I needed to choose how I was going to live. I needed to choose how I would be part of the change. And I still have vivid memories, and it's a long time ago, of going home one night after 12 hours of editing on these stories. And I was feeling totally wiped out. And my daughter, who was two at the time, and she just got married 2 weeks ago, so that gives you a clue how long ago that was. She was two. She crawled up on my lap and fell asleep. And I realized that I got to make a choice, because she did not assume that I was going to abuse her. And I got to choose how I was going to live. Okay, so that's 25 and 30 years ago. And I've been part of the fight since then. And I wish it was over. It is not. Fast forward 25 years. Okay. Several of my VACA students are working on a video with Mennonite women. And one of the women who came to campus to work on that was Carolyn Holdred Hagen. She was one of the original people that helped me in 1992 on that video. And she said to me, "No one has done anything artistically or prophetically about John Howard Yoder. You should never say those kind of things to me, especially when you offer your story and offer to walk with me into that place." It's just to say that started the process. I went to Wesley Seminary, did all the art you're going to see today, while on an artist in residency there, dealing with what I learned from the John Howard Yoder case. This is not going to be about primarily what I learned. If you want to know that, come to the colloquium a week from today. That's where I'll be speaking about that. But I was talking just 2 weeks ago to one of my former students, and she shared with me her story of trauma, which happened years ago on this campus. It doesn't ever end. It happens, it is here, and we should pay attention. So what I want us to begin with is understanding that it happens in our churches, that it happens at Christian universities, that it happens regularly, and that it is extremely painful. And I have come to understand that maybe what is most painful about happening in our families and in our churches and in this institution is that this is a place we expect to be safe. So one of the first pieces I did was Shattered, which is talking about this idea that we expect the church to be a place where we gather, we come together, we have safety, we feel like people will care for us and take care of us, and it ends up being a place potentially of great harm. This breaks the welcome that all of us should feel in church. And so I've come to believe and understand that we need to think about how shattered and broken this table has become for many in our midst. Ruth Krall, one of the writers on the John Howard case, said, "I have come to the conclusion that when a religious organization becomes more concerned about status, control, power, theological agreements, sociological unity, authority, behavioral purity, and orthodox words, boy, isn't that enough, than about embodied and compassionate love of the neighbor, justice in situations of injustice, spontaneous acts of charity and helpfulness towards the vulnerable and mutual compassion for each other's humanity in the face of great personal and social differences, it has already crumbled on the inside. And if anything, I discovered that I was part of this church." As I worked on this exhibit, one of the bitter ironies for me was how it intersected with my faith tradition. This is an icon I had been working on in the fall as well, of Macon Wends, a woman, a teacher, who was silenced with a tongue screw. And if you follow Orthodox tradition, you're not allowed to put the tongue screw on her face because this is her glorified being, so the tongue screw is in the bottom corner to remind us of her story. She was silenced with a tongue screw by the powers, so she could not speak. And I kept saying, my tradition should have remembered what it felt like to be silenced. They should have remembered the pain of the tongue screw. They should have noticed how many women wore them in their martyr's mirror, wore them to their death, to death, the ultimate silencing. But what I discovered was no, silencing the victims of sexual abuse was also part of my tradition.
You spoke of faith and hope. You offered words of healing. You spoke about injustice, injustice in this country, injustice in this city. You prayed for God to care, to heal, to intervene. You prayed for God to hear your words, to hear your words. But when I told my story, you went silent. You did not speak of injustice. You did not speak. You did not speak. It was silent. The space was full of silence. Silence? The space between the words, silence. The words that were never spoken, silence. The answer of those in power, silence. The continued answer, silence. How do you want me to respond? To say nothing? Nothing? You desire the sound of my silence. You prefer the sound of my silence. If I am silent, you don't need to hear. If I am silent, you don't need to respond. If I am silent, you do not need to believe it is possible. If I am silent, you don't need to believe it happened. If I am silent, you don't need to act. If I am silent, you are safe. If I am silent, your church is safe. If I am silent, your reputation is solid. If I am silent, your world goes on just the same. And then You assured me that you could handle it, that you would handle it, that you would make sure it was taken care of. Things will happen. But your word was silent. And then you tried to mute God, to make God seem silent, to hold your spiritual power over me, to make me submit to the abuse once more, just so I could get a glimpse of what you called grace. What you traded for love, what you desired, so you could twist tighter and tighter until I was silent forever.
That was based on several friends who responded why they were silent. What also happens is that the survivor is often blamed for what happens. They are made to feel maybe it's their fault. That's what we do sometimes, because we feel better if we can blame them, because we don't have to deal with it. And many feel they are totally abandoned by the church.
Blamed, shamed, abandoned. I told you my story. I told you my story, but you ask, what were you wearing? I told you my story, but you say, you must have led him on. I told you my story, but you ask, were you drinking? I told you my story, but you say with the sideways glance, are you sure? You probably wanted it and just changed your mind. I told you my story and you respond, how can you say that about him? He is so important. How can you say that about him? He is a wonderful leader. How can you destroy his career? You must have done something. Look. It was hard enough for me to believe it myself. It was hard to believe that he did this to me. It was hard to not question myself. It was hard not to believe it was my fault. That I must have done something. It was hard not to believe that I actually deserved this humiliation, this pain. It was hard not to believe that I was guilty. And then you just come along and add to the pain, because you prefer to blame me rather than face the ugly, brutal truth of what he did. You know, I almost chose not to tell anyone because I felt so disgraced. I felt I had no one to tell. I had no one who would listen. I've heard the refrain, men will be men. Think about it. Are you telling me this is normal? I was afraid to raise a scene. I was afraid of being left alone, of being marked for life. I felt abandoned, alone, shoved out of my own community. I felt that I was outside of the church. The sanctuary was roped off. The sacred space I used to enjoy fully was now closed. Now it is painful. The place is confusing, and I am not welcome. Why do you shame me? Why do you want me to feel guilty for what he did to me? It is painful enough without the looks I get from you, or the way you describe me. It is painful enough without the glances, the slight turning away, the voices dropping when I enter the room. Abandoned, left alone. Yes, you said you cared. You would help. But I am not the most important one. And you think you have to make a choice. Either my story is true, which will shake your tidy world, or you will abandon me to protect your own little world. I told you my story, and you blamed me. I told you my story, and you shamed me. I told you my story, and you abandoned me.
When I agreed to do this, Chapel, I didn't think about the ramifications of how you move from anger and pain, because those are things that do serve us, because they help us face this reality. But I think through all of this journey that I've been on in 30 years, I still believe that our voice is not being silenced by God. So this is just a final lament. I invite you to make up your own words as it goes along, because I can't speak what you're crying. Oh, we have waited so long. Waited so long for the truth to be told, not the disguise of a lie, for the voice of God to respond to my cry. Oh, we have waited, oh, waited so long. Oh, we have waited so long to not hear the words, trust me, everything will be fine. For our word to be our word and not to be ignored. Oh, we have waited, oh, waited so long. You heard me, we have waited so long for the objectification to be shattered by human choice. We have waited, oh, waited so long to never hear again, that's just what men do, to be loved and cherished in the image of God. We have waited, oh, waited so long. Oh, we have waited. Waited so long.
Love me for us, love me, I dost love. us in on page 16 and sing the story.
May you feel surrounded by God today. Go in peace.